You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. With me, as always, Elliot Fontanet.
Hey.
JC De Leon.
What up?
Logan Yuri.
That is me.
All right, folks. It is Tuesday night. You're listening to this on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, or perhaps next week, because Logan has things to do, and sometimes editing takes a backseat to his real-life duties.
I'm a busy man.
But what a time to be 31 years old. LeBron James, 31 years old. Michael Phelps, 30,
I thought you were talking about me.
31 years old, winning a gold medal tonight in thrilling fashion. Hot off the presses, actually literally within the last 20 minutes, winning the gold medal. Ramon Ramirez, 31 years old, hosting Inside the Locker.
I look forward to your gold medal.
Pretty exciting. We got that vine of Kevin Durant and DeAndre Jordan cheering on Michael Phelps. USA, USA. Pretty motherfucking exciting. Look, don't poke the bear. And what we're going to talk about tonight, though, as much as we love the Olympics, is the theme for tonight is, oh, shit, it's football season.
Yeah.
What? Okay. So over the next couple of weeks, we will be thinking about football, rolling out our fantasy football previews, our positional previews, our college football previews. But we wanted to keep it 100 in the spirit of the show. We wanted to kind of just start off the top of our head. This is the point in the year where you're like, okay, so this happened. I gotta schedule my fantasy draft. I gotta re-sign up for my league. I gotta send out some emails. Gotta see who's available.
The Joker drafting?
I gotta find out who's not coming back. Oh, so and so had a kid this year, and money's tight, so I gotta find a new guy. So we want to catch you up, okay? And we're gonna do that by catching up ourselves, okay? So we're going to talk in terms of football and fantasy football as we experience it right now. So first things first. By the way, guys, Lamar Miller, if you're drafting early, he's being projected as high as the number one overall running back in fantasy football this year. He's the guy who's getting – he has a 16-point-per-game reception. Excuse me. The RotoViz projection models have him at 16.4 points per game in PPR leagues. So you can justify if you're picking in the top three, you can take Lamar Miller. Now,
it makes sense when you consider how he's been used the last couple of years and how Arian Foster, in theory, would have been used had he not been the injury player that he was. And now Lamar Miller's in Houston. And so, yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, he might be the guy. And people like Ezekiel Elliott, because he's a Dallas Cowboy, because he made a lot of headlines recently, may get drafted higher. But if you have a top three pick and you don't love Jamaal Charles coming off of his knee injury, you don't love the fact that Le'Veon Bell has a 4-game suspension, feel okay about taking Lamar Miller and get excited about drafting him and prioritize him this month. Another thing that we're seeing is, wasn't long ago that conventional wisdom said draft running backs early, often, quickly. You want to stack your team. And then, of course, the league changed a little bit, and now you have these superstar tight end receivers, and everyone is stockpiling people. For the first time in modern NFL history, according to the Washington Post, you know who the number one player is in fantasy, according to ESPN and Yahoo and all the models and average draft positioning? Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want me to guess, I'd say Antonio Brown.
Number two and number three are Julio Jones and Odell Beckham Jr. So the game has changed. The game has flipped. And that means that you have an opportunity to zig where others zag. What was all the rage in 2013 and 2012 was the zero RB formula. Now that can be traced to my buddy, and I consider him a friend, Sean Siegel, who is a prolific fantasy football theorist and writer. And he said 4 years ago, hey, fuck this draft RB. Go out and get yourself big, point scoring receivers and fill in the thing. His strategy was called zero RB, the theory that you could draft receivers through the first four rounds or so and then get some late round running backs and just kind of stuff it and find one sleeper and just plug and play. And that really caught on because, especially when we're talking about PPR leagues, and you've seen the proliferation of PPR leagues lately, where most leagues have point per reception and not just standard scoring, where you don't get that extra point per reception. They're therefore creating a whole new class of pass-catching running backs like Deion Lewis that can get you a lot of juice. That became mainstream. And now that that's mainstream, and now that that's peak mainstream, and Antonio Brian, Odell Beckham Jr., and Julio Jones are going top three, now it's time to zag.
So what you're telling me is I need to recruit a team entirely of wide receivers.
Get yourselves some white receivers. These black receivers.
I thought you said white receivers.
Get yourself, like, go out and prioritize Eric Decker.
For the record, I did not say white receivers.
Get yourself.
I didn't know if you said white or white.
I thought the joke was white receivers. Yeah, you got a Ziegler zag, so get only white receivers.
But get a bunch of gym rats. Don't get class X.
Get some gym rats.
Some cerebral players.
Don't get any of these freaks.
They don't need a lot of natural athletic ability.
They just need that hard work ethic, and they need to want it more.
It's totally slavery. Like, that's the reason that they're better. I was just reading about it.
Whoa.
Simone Biles just won a gold. There was a gymnast in Italy who said, the gymnast who competed with her said, maybe we should paint our skin black so we can win next time.
Wow.
So I'm a little hot right now.
All right.
Because fuck her.
No, I get that.
Shit.
For those of you listening, you tune this on iTunes and you're driving to work and you're like, man, I don't really care that much about fantasy football yet. Hold tight, because we're going to talk about Donald Trump later in the show. We're going to poke the bear. We're going to get Elliot really upset. We're going to talk a little Donald Trump. So let's talk quarterbacks for a minute. Logan, you haven't looked at the rankings yet for this year.
I have not.
Who is the number one quarterback on your draft board?
I gotta assume it's Cam Newton.
You would assume correct. Cam Newton,
damn,
right?
I'm good.
AKA Donovan McDabb. Cam Newton is there's the recency bias thing, there's the marketing bias thing.
The rushing yards and touchdowns.
Yep. There's the breakthrough season that he had last year. Would you believe, though, that Andrew Luck is all the way down at number three? Would you believe?
Yes.
Because of recency bias, yeah.
So,
also because he's not been performing very well and doesn't have many tools beside him.
I'm not here to tell you who to draft. I'm not here to tell you what kind of... Excuse me, I am. I am here to tell you who to draft. I'm not here to tell you what kind of strategy you need to employ. What I'm here to tell you is that if you're going to draft a quarterback high, the number one quarterback in fantasy football this year is going to be the biggest and most durable, most accurate, strongest arm, fastest moving quarterback in the league, and that's Andrew Luck entering his fifth season.
Really?
Fifth. He's the best fantasy quarterback in the NFL. Now, you might be thinking, Ramon, what about Aaron Rodgers? Well, Aaron Rodgers is a fantastic – you don't need to tell – he's one of the greatest. But here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers. Don't be the guy who likes Aaron Rodgers. Don't be the guy who's an Aaron Rodgers fan.
I'm keeping Aaron Rodgers in my keeper league.
Don't be the guy who's like, I like Aaron Rodgers. So good.
He's going out with Olivia Munn. He's doing something right.
He's a class act. The Green Bay Packers do it right. Aaron Rodgers. We've seen a very clear decline in his statistics. We've seen a very clear decline. And we're still thinking in terms of 2011, 15-1 Aaron Rodgers. What you need to be thinking is 2015, 2014 when he was hurt, Aaron Rodgers. A quarterback who has not won a Super Bowl in 6 years. And you know, you think, well, hold on a minute. Wasn't he supposed to be the second coming? Wasn't he supposed to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all times? And he hasn't been back to the big dance or been a factor in the playoffs since 2010.
But that doesn't matter, does it? I mean, like, well, is it about week-to-week production?
From a week-to-week production standpoint, that's what I'm saying. We're seeing decreasing numbers every year for Aaron Rodgers. Now, if he's great, if you can get him, especially if at a discount. But again, for me, no matter what philosophy you employ when you draft, whether you want to go receivers early, whether you want to have Gronk take Gronk early as your first round pick, whether you want to go all in on an exciting rookie, whatever. Aaron Rodgers is almost, he just has, since 2011, so excuse me, 2012 to right now, I just don't think he's yielded the value that you've had to spend on him, especially when the Packers get late in the season. A couple years, 4 years ago, it was that the Packers clinched early and he could kind of coast down the finish line. And so fantasy-wise, he wasn't as productive. Lately, it's just been that his receivers are not elite, with the exception of Jordy Nelson, who will be back this year.
What do you expect out of a guy like Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson I see as the poor man's. I see Russell Wilson. I have him top 10. I don't have him top 5. And if you want Russell Wilson, you're gonna need to draft him in that top 5 quarterback. He's famous. He just got paid.
Just got laid
for the first time. Congratulations, Russ.
Sierra.
He's durable. He's consistent.
Sierra.
So I think the thing about Russ is, top 10, sure. But if you're anything like me, friends, Cam Newton. And by the way, I just pulled up Matthew Berry, who does the rankings for ESPN, the ESPN rankings, which is the mainstream rankings that a lot of us go off of. And you may be looking at these for the first time this week, maybe next week.
He's the Donald Trump of rankings.
I'm going to give you some gut reactions, okay? So I'm going to take Cam Newton at 1, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, all those 5 players. Go ahead and take a marker and just cross them all off of your draft board.
I was going to say, Tom Brady, like, where does he go? But I guess we can get to that later.
Tom Brady, you want to get, again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. He's one of the most consistent players in fantasy football. My strategy going into last year was, you can draft him in round 7 because after that 4-game suspension, he's going to be a man possessed. And luckily, he didn't serve it. This year, there is a 4-game suspension. And round 7 is fine. He's got Martellus Bennett now. He's got some more firepower.
Woo woo.
2-second drop, quick release, forward, forward, forward on every play. He's going to be very productive. But I'm taking them all off my draft board. So 6 through 10. Let's talk about this tier. I want you to take 6 through 10 off of your draft board. I want you to take a pen and get them the hell off your draft board. And that's Drew Brees.
Yeah.
That's Eli Manning, that's Philip Rivers.
Yep.
These kind of like eternal evergreen players that are always pretty good. That's also Big Ben, who used to be incredibly valuable, except that he's starting to break down. He's not as mobile as he used to be. He still hangs on to the ball too long. And no more Tavis Bryant. And that's also a guy, and it pains me to say this, because he was the guy who won me a lot of money last year because I was able to take him at the very end of every draft. And that's Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
NFC Championship Cardinals team. People know him. People like the Cardinals. They were the subject of a documentary. All of a sudden, he's the number 7 quarterback in fantasy. He may very well finish in the top 10 of production, but again, he's not a durable player. He's an older guy, definitely on the decline. We've reached peak Carson. Get those guys. And now you got to take him as the 7th quarterback off the board. That's hilarious. Get him off. So now, 11.
Elliot's got something.
Okay.
Well, I forgot his name, but he was on the Saints and he got transferred to Seattle. Tight end.
Jimmy Graham.
Don't take Jimmy Graham. I took Jimmy Graham. Seattle's not using him the same way the Saints are. He's never going to be the same player.
Yeah.
Just do not take Jimmy Graham.
I wonder if Ramon, so, and you were kind of one of the people who I took inspiration from in the idea of don't take quarterbacks early. So I'm wondering how high you might have this guy on my list, because he's pretty high on mine. And by high, I mean low, and drafting a quarterback low. I picked him up late last year, and he actually did pretty well for me on a really bad losing team. Blake Bortles.
Yeah, Blake, you saw the Jaguars trend in the right direction, right? They have some pretty good fantasy pieces. I think the question isn't, is he going to have an opportunity to be really, really productive for you? The question is, and this is where the intersection of football and fantasy football, does Blake Bortles suck? Because all of the pieces around him won't make a damn bit of difference if he can't get them the ball. Is he accurate enough? Does he have the poise? Is he going to melt down? Is he going to have those Jake Delhomme 5 interception games? And I think the answer is he might suck. And if he might suck, I'd rather not build a team around him. But we're on the same wavelength thing, and that's that I...
As far as, like, drafting late, yeah.
Yeah, I'm an evangelist for get your quarterback late. You're not going to see a significant decline in production, and you'll be in pretty good shape. So for me, now, let's continue to go down the Rolodex. Now, 11 through 15, according to ESPN, Kirk Cousins, Blake Bortles, Matthew Stafford, Tyrod Taylor, Tony Romo. So of those, I want you to take Kirk Cousins off of your draft board because that's a run-first team. If Jordan Reed goes down, he doesn't have the receivers to really, really stretch the field, although he may because we haven't really seen what Josh Dobson's going to do in the NFL. But year one, I don't love it. Again, Blake Bortles, for me, he's off my board because it's too much of a gamble for my blood. I think he might suck, although, again, I love the position that he's in. So if you believe in him...
He's young.
If you think it's a breakout year, I'm all for it.
I think he's a good quarterback that's surrounded by terrible talent.
This is
terrible
year
schools.
Three for him, right?
Going into year three, yeah. Absolutely. Another guy this guy is steady. No longer has Calvin Johnson, so he's sliding all the way down. But he's in the prime of his professional career, and that's Matthew Stafford. He's a quarterback that sometimes will throw the ball 50 times in a game. I think you can get a lot. I love Matthew Stafford, and I love that people are low on him. And I think he's a proven commodity. Even in 2011, 2010, when he was in year two, year three, he was slinging it. I think he's a great guy. But, again, 13th overall quarterback, don't love it. Don't love the position, love the player, though. This is a good tier, though. If you're drafting in this tier, Stafford is a guy I love. Another guy that the fantasy nerd, so like the fantasy Twitter community, like the really nerdy dudes who obsess over this, like they're really excited about Tyrod Taylor this year. And it makes sense. He's got kind of a Cam Newton type of game, not just because they're both African-American, but because they're run-first quarterbacks whom their coaches trust to carry them, who aren't going to waste a lot of time in the pocket and who are going to get some rushing touchdowns. So I think that absolutely works. But now I'd rather have Tony Romo. Now Romo, he's one of those players that has a sort of top four ceiling. But a lot of people are saying, well, the Cowboys are going to come out. They're going to throw a lot. They're going to run the ball a lot. They're going to have that Alfred Morris, Ezekiel Elliott, Darren McFadden, three-headed monster running the ball. Jason Witten's declining. Des Bryant isn't what he used to be. Des Bryant's still one of the two or three best receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Last year, you can pretty much discount it. He had an injury early, and then the rest of the season, you know, was basically standing around playing with Brandon Weeden and Matt Castle. I think Tony Romo can have a big bounce back year, and especially the thing I love about Tony Romo is you get those six games against the NFC East, and those games are always consistently high scoring, high action. Think about all those Sunday night Giants games that we see every fucking year, those 270 yards, three touchdown games. Gavin Escobar, this is the make or breakout year from huge tight end prospect that they took in the second round back in 2013. This is the Gavin Escobar year, right? Jason Witten is still all reliable. Ezekiel Elliott is a great pass catching back. So you're going to see those like dink and dunk plays where he just breaks it off for 30 yards. In this tier, I like Tony Romo. Now, that said, guess what I'm doing, guys? Mm. I'm taking him off my draft board.
What?
I'm taking him off my draft board.
No!
I don't believe it.
Let's get dangerous, okay?
Isn't that like a Darkwing Duck reference?
So hang on. So did you take Stafford off?
I did because. Okay. I love
so everybody you mentioned you've taken off.
I've taken off my draft. Now, me personally, I'm talking about, you know, if you draft wherever you want to draft. But the way I draft is I load up on running backs, receivers, and tight end, and a tight end or two. Okay. And then I just wait as long as I can on quarterbacks. So, that's just what I always do.
So are you going to get who you want next? Could I guess?
You tell me. So now we're in
Andy
that.
Dalton.
Andy Dalton is a guy who was on a lot of my teams last year. Absolutely. He's a guy who is consistently in that 17 to 20 range. He's a guy who probably won't ever win a Super Bowl. Pretty damn good fantasy player with some damn good players. Tyler Eifert, AJ Green, big, reliable running backs that'll get you down the field. But you know
also
what?
Also reliably healthy.
Reliable. He's off my draft board. He's off my draft board, okay?
Wow.
So this next year, Joe Flacco, consistent Super Bowl winning player. He's the Troy Aikman of fantasy of 2016, where he's just never been. He's never been a great fantasy player. That's never going to change. He's a great quarterback. He's an elite quarterback. But no,
Yeah.
He's not a fantasy guy. Ryan Tannehill, again, I think he might suck. If I think you might actually suck, I'm uncomfortable. Jameis Winston, hey, year two, great weapons, pretty exciting. I think the problem with Jameis Winston is that he's too high profile a player. He's going to get overdrafted. Marcus Mariota, now we're talking. Now we're talking about, how about a kid who scored 4 touchdowns in his first game as a pro? How about a kid who's year two with the Titans? Optimism, no expectations, gets to play against the worst division in football, the AFC South. So I'm pretty excited about Marcus Mariota. I think he has an Aaron Rodgers-esque ceiling, and that's kind of how he compares when you're talking physical specimens. But here's what I'm really excited about. This is my guy. I think he's the next Brett Favre. I think he's the next gunslinger. I think he's got the players to be so much fun in, and I think his team is going to be a very exciting 6-10.
Johnny Manziel.
Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders is a guy that I can't wait to draft. I think he's going to chuck and chuck some more. I think they're going to be a pass-first offense, and I think by late October this dude is going to be just 3 interceptions, 5 touchdowns, 400 yards kind of game. I love the volume. I'm excited. Now,
so I have a keeper league where I have Carr as my second QB after Aaron Rodgers. Do you think I should keep both of those?
What I would do, if you already have Aaron Rodgers, you might as well keep him, right? Like if it's just a straight up, now if there's a salary component.
So it's a year component. So like I have Aaron Rodgers for 2 years after this, including this upcoming season.
You know,
but I have Carr for 4, including this next season.
I think you still got to keep Aaron Rodgers. I think you do. There's a good chance that Carr becomes a really exciting player, and I'm very excited about him personally. I just think he's a chucker. He's a gunslinger. I really love that about his game.
I appreciate that.
But I also think he's the last high volume passing dude on the fantasy boards, because after that, now forget what I just said, because here's something very interesting. He's been consistently drafted in the top 6 or 7 since he came into the league in 2008. ESPN has him at number 23. Is Julio Jones on a different team? Matt Ryan going super, super late. Now that's interesting, because while guys like me, you know, hipstery players might get excited about getting the next big guy, right? The next, oh man, Derek Carr's next. Matt Ryan, you can get him as the 23rd quarterback off the board. That's pretty damn exciting.
Matty Ice.
Now I'm just going to say this one time. We don't have to go into detail. Jared Goff, Teddy Bridgewater, Mark Sanchez.
Blaine, who knows?
Blaine, Teddy Bridgewater, yeah.
Blaine Gabbert.
What do you expect?
Sam Bradford, Robert Griffin III.
Oh.
Off my board.
Right.
Off my board.
What do you expect out of Brock Osweiler in Houston?
Well, he's off my board.
Okay.
Let's start with that. He's off my board. I think the problem with Brock Osweiler is he wasn't great in college. He doesn't do anything exceptionally well except be tall. He's not exceptionally strong, exceptionally huge arm, exceptionally quick. He's just a big dude. And I tell you what, Colin Cowherd pointed this out. I completely agree. John Elway had no problem letting him walk. And that tells you something. So I'm going to wait and see. But again, old, reliable, boring guys, Alex Smith, Jay Cutler, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Matt Ryan, those are all in the bottom third of draft positioning. So any one of those quarterbacks I'm happy with going into the season. All right. So that's our quarterback rundown, I suppose. but also, the caveat there is, oh, shit, I haven't run my projection models. I haven't made all my spreadsheets. My first draft of the season is this week. For those that don't know, I'm in 10 different leagues. First one drafts early here this week. So, you know, who knows? Who knows where we're going to be? But that's kind of where we're at, man. I'm excited. What about you guys? Anything? Any questions? Anything that you're excited about going into fantasy football season?
Excited about losing.
Yeah. What I love about...
It's a long march to losing for me.
The inside the locker league is that Elliot, we can consistently count on him to he pays on time.
And I do pay on time.
And yeah. then we take his money. It's pretty great.
Hey, there you cannot, and this is something that anybody who's listening, if you don't know this, you need to learn this. If you're going to participate in something and you're betting money, just assume you've already lost it. Don't go into a bet thinking, like, if you go to Vegas and you bring 600, mm-hmm. if you want to have a good time, just assume you no longer have that 600.
See, that's the number one rule.
That's the number one rule.
How I live my life.
And the funny thing is, because there's some of you that take $600 to Vegas and lose $600 after a night, and then the next morning think, my money's still out there. I got to go get it back.
Nope.
And that's when you get in trouble.
Your debt is out there.
And that's when you get in trouble. So
you got to know how to do Vegas right.
Oh, and also, if anybody ever tells you, now you're playing with house money, leave the table and leave the casino right then. Because there's no such thing as house money. There's only money. Mm-hmm. It's still money. You can still use it.
That's exactly correct.
I subscribe to the house money idea a little bit.
Okay, it depends. Like, if you doubled your winnings, it's no longer house money. Take your double winnings and leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I will say, I think this year during the ITLcast Fantasy League, I think we're going to maybe potentially try to broadcast it live. A little bit of a live show. So if people want to follow along, tweet us at ITLcast, and we'll
It'll actually be on Sunday, the 28th. You'll still be out of town, Elliot.
But here's the thing. Can't y'all just, like, tell me when I'm up? And I can just tweet in, like, what I want?
Yeah, we'll discuss it off my... Yeah, we'll either do one of two things. We'll either kind of text you and see... That's what we're going to do with Brian's dad. Or we can just kind of pretend to auto-draft and sort of best available based on need. We won't screw you.
Yeah, and talk about screwed. Like, I'm a black guy going to a fucking cabin in the woods for a weekend. I'm not nervous at all.
First one murdered.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You remember the Jason movie where he, like, kicks the black guy's head off?
Yes.
Jesus.
I tell you, there's a podcast, I forgot the name of it, I'll get it for next time, or maybe it's a Cracked article, where they talk about some of the implausibilities of horror movies, and just, like, thinking about it from the villain's side, like a lot of those Jason movies. It's like, so let me get this straight. Jason waited in this woman's house all night just for her to... just to maybe turn this way. Because the last time we saw Jason, he was over on the other side of town. Presumably Jason can't drive. So Jason's either walking or riding a bike across town. And it's like one of the best ways to think about horror movies.
Yeah. He's taking a bus.
This transfer still good? And they're like, no. I don't have change on me.
We have had a fan ask we're going to do the fan league, which I think last year you managed, and I definitely don't have time to do it this year.
You know,
to manage it, I don't know if you do or not.
Could he be in our league?
I brought the ruckus to all you motherfuckers. I don't think you want any more.
Well, I mean, you do have. I know why you're waiting for fantasy football, because I just whooped everybody here in the movie prediction race. Mm. That's what happened.
That's true.
Hey, what was the name of my team? It was Gucci something. Yeah. I love your name, so I was like, I gotta stun on that name.
All right,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the final tally was, but Elliot did win the summer box office movie challenge.
We've gone off the roads. People don't know what we're talking about. We had a summer box office challenge where we all picked movies, and whoever had the most box office would win. Elliot won because he had Civil War, and he had Dory
the Explorer. Finding Doris.
I got a very strong third place.
So there we go. We did it. I came in second. Adam Charles came in fifth because he wasn't here, and he auto-drafted
Midnight Special,
a movie that was not actually released in theaters.
No, I got that, you fuckers.
but we did manage to auto-draft like all the movies that did the worst for Adam, which is funny.
So, all right, I want to talk a little bit about Donald Trump.
Okay.
Our next president of these United States.
Man, fuck that.
Hail to the chief.
I was going
to
say, you know, it's interesting because it's like, a reasonable person can vote for Mitt Romney. A reasonable person can vote for George W. Bush, for John McCain. Obviously. A reasonable person can vote for Mondale, could vote for all these. Like, if you think of, like, the biggest losers of the last 100 years in presidential politics, like, you can make a reasonable case for all these usually men as reasonable, intelligent people who have this Donald Trump thing. You know, first and foremost, it's the most, like, embarrassing thing ever. It's terrifying. It's a black... Do you guys read all the Black Swan articles?
Mm-mm.
If you Google Black Swan, Donald Trump, all these articles come out. You know, there's all these... A Black Swan event is one of these sort of, like, these holy fuck, we didn't see that coming moments that just kind of, like, happens. Yeah. So that's basically Trump. He's the Atlantic probably has the best piece. He's like the figure that appears at the end of a democracy is the Donald Trump figure.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Well, even a few weeks ago, I kind of tweeted out to people. I was like, think of how far we are removed from the moment of Donald Trump talking about the size of his penis. Mm-hmm. And like retrospectively, how, I guess, normal or sane that was compared to what he's done since. And I even had a discussion with someone where I posed the question. I was like, let's say Donald Trump wins. Like, would he be the most universally disrespected president? And I kind of absentmindedly forgot about all the racism that Barack Obama has faced. But I was looking at it from the prism of, I wasn't a big George W. fan. But if somebody were to tell me, hey, all expense paid trip to Washington, access to the White House, you get to meet George W.
I still want to meet him.
And hang out in the Oval Office. Like, fuck yeah, I'm taking that trip.
Yeah.
President Trump, no interest.
I mean, I can spit in his face.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a 7-year-old.
Which I'm pretty sure brings us to our next podcast, which we're going to be starting soon, which we just announced. It's going to be all about Donald Trump's penis.
The Donald Trump penis podcast.
It's going to be the shortest podcast of all time. He can hold his his iPhone in his tiny hands.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like if Donald Trump had a big penis, we would have seen it by now.
If he had a big penis, he wouldn't be running for president. He wouldn't be having his name on everything. Here's the thing: biologists have proven amongst monkeys, amongst like a species of monkeys, that the males with the smallest balls squeal the most.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's like, motherfucker, nobody's secure in who they are. And their attributes needs to put their fucking name on that many buildings. That's all I'm going to say.
So how much of this am I supposed to edit out?
None.
None. So, I don't know, man. I mean, the thing about that is like, Barack Obama gives a shit ton of speeches. And you know that dude's packing a major dong. So, like, I don't know if it's fair to say every politician has a small penis.
Not every. But people who are so into self-aggrandizement, like they need you to know how great they are.
Yeah, like Hitler had like a medically small penis.
Really? Right?
He had like a freaking.
It was a micro penis.
Makes a lot of sense.
So the Trump thing is interesting because, we haven't seen his dick and.
It just reminded me of the "Let Me Smell Your Dick" song.
No, but
where you been?
At this point, this is the official oneofus.net inside the locker call to see Donald Trump's penis.
Where, you know,
give it time. It probably's going to happen without us asking.
But let me ask you guys this: say Donald Trump drops his penis, right? He tweets a picture of his penis. You know, we have that document in front of us.
He pulls a Draymond Green.
Because the other thing is that, you know, there is a long history of women saying that he's a great lover. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he has a big penis, because for all we know, he overcompensates his small penis by going above and beyond.
I'm proof of that.
Other tasks.
And going, yeah.
So what I'm getting at, though, is like, say he drops photos of his penis, okay? And it's huge. Say Donald Trump has just like a huge dick. And he just, like, puts that out on Twitter.
I'm not going to believe it's his. And I'm going to need to see what a newspaper with and a live broadcast.
Sure, but let's assume that Donald Trump was able to prove to the world that he has a big dick.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it, say, in late August. Does that improve his chances at being president?
He probably gains a percentage point off of it. I'm not even kidding.
Let me ask you guys this. Like, there was that article that a lot of people were passing around. And it was like, hey, Donald Trump fans are not idiots. They're actually not idiots. It's not fair for you to say that. I was going to say, like, did anybody read that article? And if so, what did it say? No?
I did. The point was Donald Trump supporters are trying to better their own placement in life. And they think that supporting him, or at least based on their own information, will make their lives better. And that's the whole point. It's not about, like, because they have an agenda. It's anything like that. But it's about, like, hey, we think that this might actually improve our lives.
Yeah. So here's my second question, and this is something that I don't understand. Why is disgust and disdain for Donald Trump? And that's the thing, like, every day he does something. Today, we're recording this on Tuesday night. Today he called for Hillary Clinton's assassination.
Yeah.
The Secret Service had to tweet about it, and they just said, hey, we're aware of the comments being made today. How on earth is disdain and disgust for Donald Trump not manifesting into?
It is, though.
I can't wait to vote for Hillary Clinton.
No, it's not. It's here's the thing. Anytime we're 90 days out from the election today, and when a person starts hitting 50 in polls, and the undecideds are like maybe 6% of the election now, But she's hitting over 50 in like all the national polls. Mm-hmm. She's leading by double digits in Pennsylvania. She's beating him where she needs to beat him. He mathematically, unless something substantially changes, cannot win.
Yeah.
Every undecided could break for him, and he still would not win.
I saw one projection. He's likely still going to win Texas.
Yeah.
But in a matter of the last 5 days, his projection has gone from 78% to 70. In 5 days, he lost 8% of Texas.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia is going to go against him, for fuck's sake.
Do you think Georgia – why is Georgia going to go against him?
Georgia, it has changing demographics. Like, Atlanta is the seminal black city in America since New Orleans is still rebuilding from 2005 in Katrina. And then you got a larger Hispanic population in Georgia who he spent the entire last August calling rapists and murderers. And then you got an educated South, sort of the new South.
South.
Like there's a, you know, people don't, like as somebody from the South, I definitely see a lot of the problems. But I tell you what, man, like the South is really changing these days. And there's this new South attitude of, look, our past is fucked up. Yeah. I get it. But you know what? We're not stupid down here. We're not a bunch of racist rubes. And there's a lot of people in Georgia, like from the film industry, from the college educated, they're just like, nope, I don't care if you happen to be my same race. I don't actually hate them, or I don't hate them enough to vote against my own interest.
Yeah.
All right. So let me ask you this. America needs a strong, diverse, dynamic Republican Party. We just need balance. We need new ideas. What's the way forward for the Republican Party? How can they not lose an entire generation? How can they not lose an entire every fucking minority in the United States?
Here's the thing. Okay.
I mean, I think it's okay to have two sides that disagree. And I think one of the things that President Obama and Hillary even sort of did in their convention speeches was that they stood up and defended Republican principles that Donald Trump is openly against. And so I think the idea
is that they had a general like saying we will defend America is screaming at the Democratic National Convention. This is unheard of.
Yeah. And so I think if you have two parties that in the end have America's best interests at heart, but sort of have just disagreeing philosophies and are willing to work together to compromise, that's what it should be. And like, you know, it's not all or nothing with Donald Trump. Like, even the unifying message out of the Democratic National Convention was unity.
Yeah.
And everything out of the Republican was fear-mongering.
Yeah, it's like
how fucked up everything is.
It's like, you know, things aren't perfect, but we can solve this shit together.
Yeah.
And, like, Obama had a line in his speech where he's like, you know, Donald Trump, like, what he's saying isn't even Republican.
Yeah.
Like, we have valid disagreements, but this is just... this is just crazy.
Oh, I think but here's the bigger picture though, right? Donald Trump didn't just become the nominee. He won many, many, many primaries.
Yeah.
Tens and tens of primaries to get to where he's at. And he did it by appealing to a mean, disenfranchised, angry base that thinks about race. Maybe not outwardly, maybe doesn't harbor outward hate toward Mexicans or African Americans, but thinks about race and is upset by the fact that there are Mexicans coming into this country, even though that's not really an issue.
It's like, more automation than anything else. It's like, it's a bunch of people that nobody has been honest with
mm-hmm.
because it's a hard pill to swallow.
But once this Trump thing happens, right? Once, mm-hmm. you know, once this Trump wave passes and hopefully it's looking right now, like you said, 3 months away, like Trump will not win. Like he's a zombie candidate. Then what?
Well, here's the thing. I think, you know, what we're seeing now is the other side of the Faustian bargain the Republicans made. And the Republicans made in 64 after the Civil Rights Act got passed and they decided, okay, well, we're going to have the Southern strategy. That's when all those Democrats became Republicans. That's what the Solid South was. But when you do that so long, whatever you do, your karma is going to come back to you. And whether you want to say it's karma or just your just deserts, whatever you want to call it, but they made their own bed. This is the bed they made. They gerrymandered all the districts so that they could have such virulent Republican districts they could never get voted out. They did this to themselves. And honestly, this is like a fire. It's going to have to burn itself out. There's no way past it. There's no way because, he won a majority of their voters. Like, so there's no way for this not to just burn itself out.
Yeah.
And this is hopefully this will be the one that shows people like, look, the world, you know, you're mad. That I get it. Like, you're the jobs you have been told your entire life, hey, if you're in America, you can get a job and support your family. I'm sorry, that's just not the way it is anymore. Like, it's just not. Like, you gotta, if you wanna be assured to support your family, you can be really talented or go to a bunch of school. Those are your choices. And we've known that for 20 years, and it's not the immigrants taking your jobs. It's not China taking your jobs. It's the fucking robots taking your jobs. 9 out of 10 jobs in manufacturing were taken by automation, not by trade and not by immigrants.
Yeah, and the other thing with that is that that American dream, that post-war dream is yeah, you're right, it's just about dead.
But it was a dream. It was just that. It was something that wasn't real.
But the things keeping that ideal alive are democratic things like unions.
Yeah.
Workers' rights. I would argue that immigration is good for the
it's good for the population level alone.
Good for the labor class.
Look at Japan. Like, they have a negative population.
So, all right. Let's wrap this hoe up. Did not mean to say hoe. That was disrespectful.
This has been our fantasy football.
Logan, I got some stuff I want you to cut out, and I'm not kidding.
We're going to go back and edit most of these things out.
Yeah.
And before we go, a salacious one for the road. I don't know. I got nothing. I think we should stop. We should quit before
we go. Make sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was gonna say that. But you say it. You're gonna say it better.
Well, I'm just gonna say, I don't know if we're gonna say the same thing. I'm saying before we go on, make sure to watch the Olympics.
God damn it! No. What the fuck? No. We're talking about Donald Trump.
I thought we were just gonna
make sure to. Here's the thing. Kids.
The Olympics are making America great again.
Here's the thing.
A fact.
I'm gonna say this one time, and I'm gonna try to not say this again through Election Day. But I'll probably say it. I'm gonna say it. You know what? Fuck that. I'm gonna say this every week on the podcast going
go
forward.
On, vote.
Register to vote. And then vote, and then that's it.
And keep voting, like voting off your elections.
And also, guys, you know, as bad as Donald Trump is, what's worse and more affecting in our lives? Did you guys know that the Texas legislature, a state that many of us call home, all four of us call home, recently like introduced a notion that said, "Hey, let's tie school funding to performance."
Mm.
I'm saying, guys. And that's right under our noses. Dan Patrick, who is a fuming monster talk show host, is the lieutenant governor of the state because you voted for the R and didn't do any research on who he was. So vote local, think global, and we need those Donald Trump dick pics. Thank you. Good night.
Da 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 da